Okay. I think the technology is on our way. I'd like to read, please, in our Bibles, in the book of Matthew, chapter 9. I see a brother doing this, so maybe I'm not being heard back there. Matthew, chapter 9. And we'll just read a couple of verses to set the tone of the meeting. And we're going to read from verse 36 to the end of the chapter. Matthew chapter 9, verse 36 to the end of the chapter. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." And that's all I'm going to read this evening. I want to just direct our attention to the fact that there's really two parts of missionary enterprise that has been effective over the centuries, and it is this: there are those who have been called of God to go and preach, and then there are those who stay and pray, and both are absolutely essential in the work of the Lord. Just like any military that is on the forefront of a battle, they would soon be defeated had it not be for supply lines bringing resources to those on the field. And that is the same in missionary enterprise. And I want to just say at the juncture of this meeting that I would like to just make known that the laborers on the field are few, as the scripture has already said. And I don't know of any missionaries at this stage in my life who are starving for resources. But I do know a lot of missionaries who are starving for fellow laborers in the gospel. And I just bring that to your attention for the fact that we would like to see young men and young women with a passion for souls to do what the Lord Jesus had done in this passage. He lifted up his eyes and he saw the multitudes, and he was moved with compassion upon them. The great need was a burden to his heart. And as he saw them as sheep having no shepherd, sheep that were scattered. And in our experience, when you look at different places in the world, I'm thinking of Africa tonight, but there are many, many other places where you can go with a handful of gospel tracts and you will have people crossing the street to come and receive a gospel paper from you. And when they come and they get one gospel paper, they're not satisfied and they say, "Can I have two or three because I have family members?" And they might even criticize that you only have one title. Don't you have any others to give? Now, I would like to see something like that happen in this side of the world. I doubt that would happen, would it? If I gave you 50 gospel tracts and put you downtown Blaisdell, you have a downtown here? and let you loose in the neighborhood and say, "Would you mind, can I interest you in a gospel paper?" I am imagining that a lot of you would be coming home with your tail between your legs, thinking, "That's the last time I'm ever going to do that. I just don't have it, And I get turned away, and people are throwing it and crumpling it up, and maybe the odd person will take it out of politeness. So if you could just see the excitement of the other side of the world when you come with the gospel, and the enthusiasm that there is in children and in older ones to receive it, it changes your whole perspective on gospel outreach. Now, I was raised in assemblies as a young person in Vancouver, Canada. And I grew up in a generation where they still had series of gospel meetings, sometimes weeks on end. And they had tent meetings and children's meetings and different things like this for weeks on end. And we had numbers coming. And there were people getting saved. But for some reason, on this side of the world, those days have come and gone. I know that there are different things that we've tried. There's camp work, which works. Awana, also, a very good way of presenting the gospel to young people. But we live in a generation now where our young people are growing up in many ways not being exposed to the idea of evangelism, of taking the gospel to people and having people interested. And it's the same in Europe and in many other developed countries where we live in what is called, quote, a post-Christian era. And it is very difficult for young people who are raised in that type sort of environment to realize that that is not what the whole world is like. In fact, we live in North America here, we live in a real bubble that is not really exposed to really what is going on in the other side of the world as far as evangelism goes. And so this evening, just for a few moments, I would like to just have you lift up your eyes and look upon the fields that are white and ready to harvest and understand that their laborers are few. Now, we have recently come into some difficulty with our health. When I say recently, I would say in the last 10 years. You'll remember, some of you might remember, that in when we first went to Botswana in 1991, within 6 months I had come down with TB meningitis, and we were brought back to Canada. I was paralyzed. And we were here for about 18 months, and I regained my strength, and I regained my ability to walk. And so we went back to Botswana in 1993. But in the last 10 years, my legs have started to get weaker and weaker and weaker, to the point where now I'm back to using two walking sticks. And we are going to have to make a change geographically, because where we are living in the bush in northern Botswana, there is no physiotherapist or rehab facility. So the time has come for us to make a change. You're going to see what we have left behind in Maun, and I think you'll be pleased to see what the Lord has established in that part of the world. But our future now looks like we will be moving to Cape Town in southern Africa, where our ministry will be more of an itinerant preaching ministry instead of a pioneering work that we have been involved in the last 20 years in northern Botswana. Now, we are trying to get some further investigations on my spine to see what the difficulties are. I know there is a cyst on my spine that is seems to be there's some complications with this cyst, and it's either got more pressure on it, there's fluid in it, and it is creating more pressure on the nerve. So there is a possibility of surgery down the road where they might be able to do some sort of an irrigation thing that will allow the fluid to come out and not create the pressure, which would be a big help. But at the very least, what we have to do is move into an area where I'll be able to have some proper physiotherapy on a regular basis and rehab. Now, in Botswana, we moved to this little village in the northern part of the country called Maun. And we bought a piece of land and started to build a house, and we started to a Sunday school, and the gospel started to be preached, and we started an assembly there in 1995. And up until now, that has been our basic work. We've been working with that little assembly, seeing it grow and established and added. And so I'm just going to give you a few pictures now of what the country looks like. This is Maun, up in the Okavango Delta. And if you wanted to know where we are actually located, you can see that we do have a number of countries around us. There's Angola, there's Namibia, Zimbabwe, and then to the south there is South Africa. We have a small population of just about 2 million people. Two languages are used, Botswana and English, and it's a country about the size of Texas. And here you have a picture of my wife and myself. She has been a faithful helpmeet, and I thank the Lord every day for my dear wife. We have been married last Sunday 29 years, and we thank the Lord for that. Now this is a brother who has been a big part of the work, and his wife, his name is Dan Ngaluka, he's from Zambia, and they joined us in the work about 10 years ago, in the year 2000, and he is he and myself and one other African brother are the elders in the assembly. Now, when we felt the Lord was making it known to my wife and myself that we had to make a move to Cape Town, there was a young missionary couple, this couple here, who had come from Northern Ireland, and they were serving the Lord in another village called Sarowe with another a couple of missionaries. And I really felt that they would be a good couple to work in Maun. And the day before we spoke to them, they had reached a point in their own lives, and they felt before the Lord that they had to make a move. And then we arrived the next day, and we told them that the Lord was moving us to Cape Town, and we wanted them to know that, and we were asking them to pray. And they right away thought, that's it, that's the answer from the Lord. So since we have now come to Canada on furlough, they have now relocated to Maun, and they're a great couple, and you can remember to pray for Franklin and Jenny McElroy with their four children. And we want you to know that really the biggest part of assembly work in Botswana, as in many countries, is children's work and youth work. That's really how it starts. And we have some fantastic Sunday schools in our part of the world. For example, our little assembly, we have a rather small Sunday school. The oldest assembly has a Sunday school of around 1,200 children. And so, like I said, the numbers are fantastic, and these are children that are interested in memorizing the verses from the scripture, and they have a real keen interest in the things of the Lord. And they're just lovely, lovely kids as well. And we have a young people's group that loves to listen to the Word of God. Now, we have at times had visitors from overseas have come over, and here's a young lady from Fort Lauderdale who had come over to visit us, and you know, these African kids are just thrilled to think that here's a white kid who wants to spend time with us, and they're just so excited about that. And here's a few other African faces, beautiful, beautiful kids. Now, one of the big challenges we have is transportation. We set up a Sunday school, we set up a gospel tent in different places of the village, and we start to preach the gospel, and right away we always have a whole pile of kids, and usually they always want to come to Sunday school. Now that creates a bit of a transport problem, as you can imagine. This old truck here, it's a 1992 Toyota, got 200,000 miles on it, and as you can see, we really pack the kids in the back of that truck, and I can usually carry 25 kids or so on this truck, and I have to do two or three loads. And I thought, well, that's really a waste of my time. And so I decided something different. I got a bigger truck, and they still filled it up. And now we have just got enough money now. Several believers were interested in the work that we were doing and have given money now to buy another truck. So we're in the process of purchasing another truck. So we'll have two trucks like this going around the village on a Sunday collecting kids for Sunday school. So I can get 60, 70 kids in the back of this truck in one load. And of course, from Sunday school we do a young people's class, and here I'm just teaching them the 6 days of creation, and you can see they're quite interested. I use PowerPoint with the children as well, and they find that quite interesting. So these African kids, they're a lovely bunch of kids. We got the thumbs up from this guy, and it's all in view of seeing them saved and baptized and come into the assembly. So this young lady here, she was saved as a young person, and what's kind of interesting is in African cultures, children are not really supposed to talk when adults are around. And we've tried to break that tradition, especially when you have young people's classes. And it's really funny. You know, my wife and I will be in the kitchen. I was going to say preparing meals, but I'm really not good at preparing meals. She's preparing meals. I'm just in the kitchen. And they will all be in the living room. And there's a lot of chatter and giggles and laughs, and all these young people are going on. The moment I step out of the kitchen into the living room, silence. And it takes a long time for these kids to warm up and start, you know, enjoying each other. So that has finally come now. We've broken the ice and we're starting to enjoy their company in that regard. So this young lady here was one of them. And she trusted the Lord. And she went on to Cape Town, study physiotherapy. And she's now a physiotherapist in Botswana. Unfortunately, not in the village that I'm in, but she's in one of the bigger centers, and that's where she is. And we do have occasional work teams that come to Botswana. Some time ago, we were in the need of a new building. This was the building that we have been meeting in. This was just a gum pole. Thatch roof and a reed structure, and that was our meeting place. And we outgrew that, and the village was starting to develop with newer buildings and modern facilities. And so some brethren from Canada and overseas, Canada and the States, were exercised about us getting a proper building. And so this is the building that we presently have. We can seat about 500 people in the building when we're maxed out, and it's a tremendous blessing, and it's a testimony actually in the village to have such a nice building. Now the roof trusses, just for example, were actually built in Port Colborne, and they were shipped over in a container, and then we assembled it over there in Botswana. I think some of you would know Ross McEntee. Well, Ross has come over twice actually, and Arnie came over once and helped us with this. Several other brethren that have come over the years to help. Another brother that has come over recently was Ed Fletch and his son Nico. Now in our building, in our main auditorium, just to give you an idea of what we were trying to do, this is the main auditorium here. And this is the overflow here. Now we wanted to have a wall put up here so that we could isolate the main auditorium from the rest of the building during regular services. So Brother Ed put this wall up, and it sits on a rail, and this whole wall slides this way and this one slides that way. So during special events we can open up that wall and open up to the other side of the auditorium. So that's very helpful. And that was Ed and Nico from Port Colborne. Then we had some other couples that come out who wanted to put a ceiling inside the building. And these are two couples from Ontario again who came over. I unfortunately didn't get pictures of them properly posing for me. I took them on a game ride, and they were looking at elephants, so I just took a picture of them as they're looking at elephants. So here they are putting the ceiling inside the main auditorium, and that's what it looks like. And it's a very comfortable building for us right now. Now there are different things that we can do in order to present the gospel. We can set up a book table and sell Christian books and Bibles and give out gospel papers. And this is a great opportunity when visitors come. I give them an opportunity to see what it's like to give gospel papers away in a place that's hungry for the Word of God. And I give them 100 tracts and just put them out in the traffic a bit, and they're back in 10 minutes. All those tracts are gone. And it's a tremendous, tremendous privilege to share the Word of God. Also, there's the opportunity to share the gospel in the prisons and in the police station. I go weekly into the Malam prison and share the gospel with the prison officers. And in the last couple of years, I've been able to start going to the police station. And I have about 40, 45 police officers, and I share the gospel with them on a weekly basis. So, actually, both of these outreaches are on a Wednesday morning, and so I alternate between either the police station or the prison. And occasionally it's got me out of trouble, because a couple of times I got pulled over, and there was a police officer, "Oh, hello, Pastor," and "Where you go?" And that was the end of that, so no problem. Now, we do have, as I mentioned, some health concerns, and it looks like we will be heading to the region of South Africa. It's still a reasonable distance that we can come back to Botswana to do some of the work that we've been involved in. And so you can see where we'll be located is down here in Cape Town, and we have been living up here in the north part of Botswana. So it is a bit of a journey, but it is doable, and we'll be making trips back and forth. Now, one of the things that we don't know exactly what we're going to be doing in Cape Town. I do know that there'll be a fair bit of itinerant preaching, because there's about 30 assemblies in the Cape Peninsula, a lot of them are smaller, struggling, needing Bible teaching, and so we'll be involved in some of that. But one of the things that really burdened us is we were driving along one of the roads one time, just outside the region of Cape Town, and we came across what is a squatter camp or a shanty town sort of thing. And there you can see what these people are living in, just tin shacks made out of whatever they can find. And just the next picture gives you a bit of an idea. It's as far as the eye can go. That's where these people live. And I was just, so that verse that we just read, you know, about the Lord lifting up his eyes and seeing the multitude, and that's exactly how I felt when I saw that as far as the eye can see, there's these squatter camps filled with people, filled with souls, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of children amongst that group with very difficult situation that they're living in. And what can we do to reach those folks? And so this is something, I'm not sure exactly what the Lord has in store for us, but I do think it may have something to do with that. Now, what we have been involved in the last couple of years is we have felt a burden to expose young adults from this side of the world to the opportunities that there exist in the mission field. And so we have started what is known as Mission Awareness Botswana, or Missions Awareness South Africa. And what we have done is we have given an opportunity for young people from this side of the world to come over. What we do is we set up the gospel tent for 2 weeks. And during those 2 weeks, we get them involved in outreach ministry in the tent in the evening. But during the day, we either in the morning or in the afternoon, we have an opportunity where we will visit the schools, visit the prisons, do other various outreaches. There's village work that can be done, track work, and or soccer ministry. And then in the evening, of course, we have the gospel meeting. And that is a really interesting, exciting experience, that gospel tent, and how that works. We also, incidentally, have Sandy McEachern. I don't know if any of you know Sandy, but he also has joined us in that, and for an hour in the morning during the week, every day, he conducts Bible teaching and ministry and encouragement for the young folk that are coming. Now, it's not just for young people on this side, but also for our African young people as well, and it's a really neat way to see them mixing and interacting with one another. Now, here we are setting up, this was the team that came in 2009, and there were a number from Fort Lauderdale and some from Ontario. And the first thing we have to do is set up the tent. So we have to get the benches, pile them up on the truck. This was before I had my truck. We had to hire this truck. And we start to set up the gospel tent. And here we have one of the young ladies. This is a young lady who got saved in our Sunday school and is a real little servant of the Lord. She's now not engaged, but she's very interested in a young man. The young man's interested in her, so we think marriage bells will be ringing in the near future. But here the tent is being set up, and then it's interesting, you know, the kids. The benches are outside, the tent's going up, and the kids are already starting to gather around and looking, what are these, what are the white folk doing now? You know, this is interesting, and that's sort of their curiosity. And it's amazing how these little African kids, you know, you'd be driving down the street, and the African kid will point you out and go, Lakoa! And really that means white man. And but they say it in like it's a giraffe or an elephant. Wow, you know, that sort of thing, you know. And they really do. I was going to use the word admire, but maybe that's not the right word. But they're curious what we are like, and they want to sit beside you, and they rub the hair on your arm, and they find that interesting, and they're just very curious kids. And as soon as you start to show any interest in them, it's amazing how a crowd draws a bigger crowd. Now, this is an example of what takes place during this, just before the tent meeting. Normally what we do before the tent meeting is we get all the young people together, we go to the tent, and then we just canvass the area again just to invite the neighbors in to come and listen to the gospel. But after the first night, all the kids in the neighborhood know what's going on, and they're waiting for us at the tent site before we get there. And then these young girls will play games with them, and duck, duck, goose, or whatever these games that they've learned over here. And they play them over there with these kids. And these kids are just mesmerized that here's a white person showing an interest in me. And they're just thrilled with the idea. Here's a good contrast. There's a blonde head in the middle of all these black kids. And of course, what she's got is a digital camera. She takes a picture of them and shows them, and they're all excited to see their faces on the digital screen. And then, of course, the gospel is preached. The picture's not too good, but it's amazing, you know. You set up the gospel tent, you go around for an hour before the tent, and you wonder who's going to come. And we had the very best night. We had over 300. In the tent. There was just no space whatsoever in the tent for anyone else. And people standing outside as well. And this is the excitement and the thrill that these young people are exposed to. And our dream and wish and prayer is that enthusiasm that they have experienced and enjoyment, they take that home with them to their home assemblies, and that rubs off to others, and who knows what the Lord is doing in their hearts as they consider their own future in light of missionary service. So there's also some practical needs that need to be met. So this lady was actually a very sad case. On a Sunday morning, on my way to meeting, I collect an elderly couple. And one time I was just shocked to see this lady on her hands and knees crawling in the sand from her house to a tuck shop, and I passed her by in my vehicle, and she's on her hands and knees crawling in the sand, and I measured the distance. It was easy to see her trail. She left these two tracks, and it was about close to a mile that she had gone on her hands and knees from her home to this tuck shop. And I've seen a lot of things, but this really bothered me. And I thought, we've got to be able to do something for this lady. So last year, or this year, one of the members of the Missions Awareness Team came over. This is a young lady from Scott Lee Assembly, Linda Bissell. And she had been given some money from the sisters in Scott Lee to help somebody who desperately needed help financially. So I had this wheelchair outside my garage. It was just basically collecting dust, and it was a wheelchair that we were using for another elderly man who was in fellowship who had passed away. And I thought, let me give this wheelchair to that lady. And Linda came with, She went to the store and bought some food and things for her. And as soon as we got there, we had to track her down, which wasn't hard because you could see those two drag marks, and they found her, and she didn't know what to expect, but we came with a wheelchair, and we picked her up and put her in the wheelchair. And she was so badly, like her dress was just threadbare, and her knees were like leather, you know, from crawling everywhere. And she couldn't speak anymore. And I don't know really what her physical problem is, but she was more interested in Linda's sunglasses than anything else. And I know in Maun we have a lot of eye problems there because of the white sand. And there's a lot of, because we are so sunny, the sun reflects off the sand and gives people eye problems. And she was so impressed with these. She wanted these sunglasses, and I was trying to, you know, encourage her to be more interested in the food. So we opened up a can of sardines, and she wolfed those down like nobody's business, and then right away back to the sunglasses. So Linda decided she would just part with the sunglasses and gave them to her. And she was real, real happy to have those sunglasses. Now, after our 2 weeks of evangelism, what we do is we take the young people or whoever's with us. I mean, it's not just for young people. We had two 50-plus-year-olds last time who came as well, and they were involved in all of this work and had a great time, and they're a great asset to the work. But we usually take them on a safari, and we go up to Victoria Falls, and we go through game reserves and that sort of thing. So this is the third week of their holiday or the third week of their visit, and this is a really beautiful picture. This was right beside our vehicle, and it was a breeding pair of lions. It was really a fantastic sight. And that's a meerkat. Meerkats are very interesting creatures, and they're quite tame. You can just go down on your hands and knees beside a meerkat, and they are instinctively want to climb up on the highest thing that's near them. So they're always looking for a bird of prey or whatever that's going to attack them. So if you crawl up beside them, the first thing they want to do is get on your shoulder and look around, and they keep going higher as they can. And if you want them to go on top of you, then you go next to that person, and then they'll climb higher and Sandy McEcker and trying to get us go on his head. So, and then we went and we took them out quad biking on the Makati-Kati Pan. Now, the Makati-Kati Pans is like portions of the year. It will be covered with about 2 or 3 feet of water, and it's got lots of flamingo and pelican, and it's a sea as far as you can see, but it's just short-lived, and as soon as the hot weather comes, it dries up and turns into a salt pan again, and here we are going out on the salt pan. And it's actually a very, very interesting experience to go out there. It's almost a spooky feeling because it's like being on the moon, and it's actually the quietest place on the earth. What we do is we encourage people when we get there to the campsite is we say, now just go and walk as far as you like by yourself, and the quietness is, you can almost feel it. It's so quiet, you can't believe how silent it actually is out there. And we had a young lady with us who really shouldn't have come. I think she was actually just looking for a holiday to Africa, but she hadn't really thought of some of the hardships that we were going to put them through. She never read my website, which I made it all very clear what she was going to be exposed to. Anyways, she said to me as we were just getting on the quad bike heading out to the pen, and she had this fear of sleeping in a tent out there, and she says, "Oh, I don't do well sleeping in tents." I said, "Well, you should have no problem then, because we're just sleeping out in the open." And she wasn't impressed with that, but that's what we did. We just slept out in the open. With a spoonbill. And somebody was saying they liked clouds. So not you, Tim. Yeah, some picture of some nice clouds. And we have some of the largest herd of African elephants in the world in Botswana, 160,000 elephants in Botswana, and we don't have the same problems as poachers as a lot of other countries have. This is a kudu. And then we do have some fantastic bird life. This is a lilac-breasted roller. We have more birds in Botswana than all of North America combined. More bird species. It's a blacksmith plover. This is an interesting sighting. This is a caracal. Normally you don't see these during the day. They're just something that you see at nighttime. But we happened to chance upon it right in the middle of the road. It was a really nice photo.
What was the name?
Caracal. Caracal. This is the Cape Buffalo, and these are actually the most dangerous creatures out in the bush. They a lot of people just think they're a dumb cow, but they're not. They're real wild creatures. And this actually is the one that kills more tourists than anything else, is the hippo. A lot of people think it's really cool to go out in a dugout canoe and get... You have a polar who pushes you along. It's quite romantic. It's wonderful. I did it once. And then I realized, oh, this is really stupid. These hippos are very territorial. And there's, you know, you can be going along in a nice, quiet stream, and all of a sudden there's a lagoon. And if a hippo's there, he's going to go after that canoe. And usually your polar is not too versed on safety skills. He's the first one out of the water and running like crazy. So you're pretty much left on your own. These are impala. They're there by the thousands. And same with zebra. Or you call them zebra here, I think, yeah? We call them zebra. There's a statue of David Livingstone with Arnott and Ross McEntee and with Joel. Actually, Bill Yule was there with his wife, is there, Naomi, and that's at Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe. These are some of the photos of that spot there. Now, we took all of our young people there as well. There's all sorts of fun things a person can do in Zimbabwe, as well as Victoria Falls. These are some of the things. Now, we like feeding the birds, and we had a visitor from Port Colborne come. Her name was Tara Bailey. She's now Tara Plett. She came out to visit us one time. So I caught this small tiger fish, and I put her at the bow of the boat, and I said, "Well, you just hold that fish up and don't move. Just stay there." And I don't know if you can see this. There's a fish eagle right there. He sees the fish, and he's starting to move in. You can see him starting to come closer there. Now she's starting to get a little bit nervous. She puts her hand up to her chin, and she can see this big bird coming. Now you can hardly see him, but he is right there, right in front of her. And you'll see in the next picture. There you see his wings. And now her knees are starting to buckle. And it's interesting because the bird is just coming in. And he comes and he almost stalls on top of her and takes the fish right out of her hand and off it goes. She can't believe that happened. And there's the fish eagle up in the tree enjoying. Now, most missionary presentations end in a slide like this. I thought we'll do it a little different. All of you. Well, I believe my time is gone, right? 8:30, that's it. So I want to thank the folks here at Blaisdell for the opportunity just to share some of the work and the need that there is in Botswana, as well as my own personal health concerns. I've also had some bladder surgery in August that hasn't been completely successful yet, so I'm still using a super pubic catheter. And when I was originally sick 1991. I started to get better, but my bladder was completely dysfunctional for 5 months. And as a result of that, there has been some damage to the bladder, which I've just coped with for the last 19 years. But I had surgery on August 11th, and they repaired a lot of the damage, but the bladder has still not started functioning yet. So it would be really nice just to have that working again properly. So I'd ask you just to pray about that, and also about the future medical investigations regarding the cyst on my spine. And of course, the need of the work in Botswana as well as South Africa. A tremendous opportunity exists there. And so, the labors are few. And those that are there are often ill and are needing replacing. And you just heard of our brother Aiken, who again, and a number of the servants of the Lord, missionaries, are facing illnesses and these sorts of things and getting older. And it's time for others to also think of that as a place that you can go to work on. Now, those are all I'm just going to talk about right now. Can I just pass it over to the brother again to close in prayer? That'd be all right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.